This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of December, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Foster, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be here with all the agricultural news, and I'll tell you how those high moisture contents of corn may have zapped nearly $100 an acre out of the back pocket of the farmer. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Here are the way the numbers settled in Chicago today. The contracts finished like this. In the nearby wheat futures, the December contract at 519 and a quarter, pinning a half higher on the afternoon. The March futures up a half at 537 and a half, and the May at 550 and three quarters, up a half of a cent for the afternoon. July futures at 560 and a quarter, unchanged on the day, and the nearby September futures unchanged at 574 and a quarter in the wheat pit. That, of course, would be the new crop wheat. December corn futures up 12 cents today, 389 and a quarter, the settlement price. March at 404 and a half, 11 and a half higher, and the May at 415 and a half, up 11 and a half. July futures at 425, 11 and a quarter higher, and September contract at 431 and a quarter, up 10 and three quarters. December corn at 438 and a half, up 9.5 cents. December oat futures at 248, up 2. The March at 259, up 3 for the day. January soybean futures at $10.35, up 8 cents. March at 1043, 7 and a quarter higher, and the May at 1049, up 6.5 cents. July 1053 and a half, up 5 and three quarters. August at 10.48 and a half, a nickel higher, and next year's November beans at $10.18, a penny and a half higher on the afternoon. December bean meal at 3.14.50, up 1.40 for the day. December oil at 39.22, up 13. Livestock, nearby contracts in the live cattle. December futures 80.15, up $1.05. Febs at 83.27 and a half, up $1.10. Live cattle January futures, feeders that is, 91.57 and a half, up 85 cents. And December lean hogs at $64, up 37 and a half cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $69.87 a barrel, down 67 cents. The February there at $71.95, down 37 cents. January ethanol, $1.91 and 2 cents, a penny and a half lower. The natural gas down 17 cents at $5.12 and 9 cents of a cent. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.83 and 6 cents, just about unchanged on the day. Heating oil futures or diesel fuel, $1.90 and a half. That's up 0.2 cents. And gold at $1,119.40 an ounce, settled $6.30 lower. The Dow now stands at 10,469, just about 64 points higher on the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 76.57 is up 0.53 for the day. The CRB index at 270.79, up 1.27 on the afternoon. And the Goldman Sachs at 489.29, up 1.44. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. It says this afternoon, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from 15 in far northwestern parts of Illinois to 40 in the far south. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 0 in far northwestern Illinois to 24 in the far south. Tomorrow, increasing cloudiness. Highs will range from 25 in far northwestern Illinois to 43 in the far south. No precip expected today, tonight, and tomorrow. Light precip will likely move across Illinois and Indiana Saturday night and into Sunday. More on the ag weather when we get to the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
It's a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting is on the line with us this afternoon from his Lafayette, Indiana office. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Hey, Mike, let's start out taking a look at what happened in Chicago on this day in the past couple of days. Corn futures have managed to maintain a bit of a rally. What'd you think of it all?
Well, you could tell, I think, that the storm out west finally worked itself into the corn trading psychology. You know, started yesterday after the report, Todd, didn't get really much traction because the outside markets and the wheat and the beans didn't really play along either. But then today started out again, even with a weaker than expected opening in the grains. We started out again trying to push the corn back up. We were able to hold the 50-day moving average. Then we were able to get back up above the 200-day and the 10-day moving averages. That stimulated some technical buying. Then at the end of the day, I was hearing word that commission houses were starting to recommend buying corn around late day in the trading day. And then also the trading psychology started to shift and reports started to come in again that, the index funds are going to be coming in here. And so even with the idea that the beans and the wheat really didn't support too much until later in the day, the corn didn't really seem to want to give up much. And I think a lot of that goes back to the weather out west. And I think a lot of that goes back to the fact that the weather out west tightened up the Gulf basis and also tightened up some of the interior basis pretty nicely. And I think that was really the major support of the trade here today in corn.
Yeah, in this case, I suppose we're not really talking about a weather trade and expectations, but a weather phenomenon that had already happened. And I suppose the potential fundamental change it could have in the marketplace. I made a trip to Lincoln last night and then back to Elkhart. Both are only about 11 miles away from each other, but I went different routes both times. In the evening last night, there were three or four combines out on the road. That was about 5:30 in the evening. Of course, it was dark, and there were folks still harvesting. Today, there were combines running from here to there. It's an 80-mile trek across there. I'd say I probably have seen nearly, at night I can't see very far, but today I probably saw 500,000 acres of land, that is, in that trek across there. And there's more corn out there than you might have suspected, I suppose. And frankly, there were a few bean fields left, which surprised the devil out of me. That doesn't mean much, I suppose, to the marketplace here because it's dry, it's cold, and they were able to harvest. The corn was standing straight. I saw one field that the tops were broken out of, not a big deal. But you put 8, 9, 10, 15 inches of snow like they got in Stevenson or Joe Davies County up in the far northwestern part of Illinois on top of a corn crop. I don't know whether it can stand for very long. So are we thinking that there are real countable losses in this last weather phenomenon, I guess, is the real question about the whole side of this issue.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, I think it goes back to where was the trade starting out at in terms of the yield, you know, using a number we can get a hold of. Where were they starting out on the yield number? Going into this report, no one really expected that the USDA would change their 162.9 yield, but a lot of traders thought we were probably more at 164, 165 for a national yield. I think that the storm track was bad enough that you could say maybe a half a billion bushels are going to be very hard to get to, especially if we warm up in the northern plains and the northern corn belt. The worst thing those guys could have right now is a really big thaw where everything stays soft and then they refreeze, and it takes weeks, maybe even a couple months to get back in the field. So I think what I would say to you is I think that the idea that we have a 164.5 to 165 yield being grown out there is pretty much in the can right now, that most of the trade does not believe that anymore, and that the 162.9 is still a good number to use, but maybe it's a little bit on the low side. I don't feel that way, but I think maybe the trade still thinks that we could be in the 163 area as far as a national yield. But, yeah, I think the 165, 166 guys in terms of national yield are probably not in around anymore at this point after this winter storm.
Okay, so we've done that. We've rallied the marketplace, the March contract, the leader for all intents and purposes, because December's in expiration, up 11.5 cents, 404.5. Happens to be crop insurance number two. Crop insurance been set, of course, and paid out.
Right.
But I mean, but it just arbitrarily, it's
odd.
It, yeah,
yeah.
It's that same number.
Right.
Is this the right place to be?
I think the scale up sell approach is how I would recommend doing it. You know, we talked about buying some puts last week. I did finally get some puts bought on a 10% increment here at the end of the week on the March contract. I'm going to steadily sell more in terms of buying puts. I think the best thing that's happened to us in terms of the out west and you know, living off other people's misery, those poor people out there, but I would think that we have a low or the widest basis that we're going to have here at this point. And I think we started to see that here at the end of the week with the Gulf starting to shape up. The export demand looks like the end users are coming back off the fence, wanting to get a little bit of extra corn bought. And I think that helped the interior. Even Louisville and Cincinnati were starting to shape up here at the end of the week in terms of a tighter basis. So I think we've lived through the worst basis crunch at this point, and that's why I'm really hesitant to recommend any cash sales at this point. I'd rather do it in the paper. And I think I'm a scale-up seller for two simple reasons. Number one is, do the index funds really need to come back in? I mean, look at what has happened to the gold and the crude oil. We've lost 9-11% since December 1st in those two commodities, and those are our best inflation gauges. So between that and the higher bond yields that we're starting to see, do index funds really need to come in and buy commodities again in the agricultural commodities? And tying into that, should they be buying agricultural commodities when you're looking at the fourth largest global wheat ending stocks number in the last 35 years? And I think those are the two major reasons why I still like selling on the way up, even if March corn can get back to 425, even if it can get back to 445, I think there's a level here that it needs to be hedged, and that's kind of what my plan is at this point.
Yeah, do you have real-time quotes on crude oil?
Sure.
And I've got the January. I've got a right at a 2 o'clock that it broke below 70 at 69.87 in the Jans. Where'd it go to? That was the settlement price, of course.
Yeah, we're down about 74 cents right now at 69.80, and the gold in the February is back down around $9 to $10 at 11.17. And, yeah. And, you know, that corresponds with the dollar kind of coming back towards its highs and just underneath the 77 cents.
Yeah, those nice round figures are always kind of psychologically important. Breaking below 70 bucks, a problem for crude oil?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, and today's low of that 69.46 in January, that's the 200-day moving average, Todd. And I think to sew up our conversation about the outside influences versus the corn weather, one of the neatest things I saw this week was how the S&P 500 tested that 1085 level, and mm-hmm. It didn't like it, and it bounced off of it fairly nicely. I think that was probably a third leg of the stool in terms of why the traders' psychology shifted back into the corn that the index funds were going to keep buying. I think if you are a commodity broker, you want to know as much about the S&P 500 as you can at this point, because if we break that 1085 level, I think that means a lot of problems for commodities and that index funds will tend to step away from adding to their positions at the first of the year.
Very quickly, a review of the soybean market, please.
Well, mostly a follower this week, and I think we got what we wanted on the report. The carryover, though, didn't get low enough. However, I would say the bull spreads really worked out well, and we kept seeing China buy. So I still look at beans as a leader to the upside at this point.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Other than that, I think that's it. You have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Thanks much.
Okay, thanks, Todd.
And that is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodities and Analytics Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon. You can listen to him again anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with today's agricultural news.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, a report released by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Inspector General's Office says that nearly half the food manufacturers they surveyed that are supposed to register with the Food and Drug Administration failed to give the agency accurate contact information. Congress set up the program after the September 11th attacks to keep food safe from bioterrorism and to allow quick tracebacks when contaminated food reaches consumers. A key lawmaker called the findings appalling. U.S. Representative Rosa DeLauro, who chairs the House spending panel that oversees the FDA budget, says, quote, Congress should pass comprehensive food safety legislation to give FDA the statutory authority it needs. There is still no word from USDA's Farm Service Agency on a new supplemental revenue assistance payment program that is intended to reimburse farmers for at least a portion of their losses due to lower yields. USDA's FSA has been working to get the new initiative operational, but it appears to be encountering difficulties. FDA earlier indicated that payments for the 2008 crop losses, the first crop year covered by the program, would be made by the end of this month. Three U.S. senators outlined a compromise climate bill yesterday that aims to win the votes needed for passage next year. Senators John Kerry, Joseph Lieberman, and Lindsey Graham did not offer specific details, but set a target to cut U.S. greenhouse emissions by 17% below 2005 levels by the year 2020, with the help of a cap-and-trade system, was achievable and reasonable. Meanwhile, a Kansas State University review suggests overall the U.S. farm sector will gain more than it would lose under the House-passed climate bill. On the plus side, the bill exempts agriculture from emission caps, has provisions to ease the transition to higher fertilizer prices, and offers the chance of revenue from development of a carbon offset market. And Russia widened its ban on U.S. pork imports on Thursday to include four more plants, and Russian officials say that it could close its market entirely to the U.S. should Washington fail to observe quality standards. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you that that second program can be listened to anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. Our guest this week for Commodity Week is Dan Bossi. Be sure to tune in when you get the opportunity, whether that's on the radio or at willag.org. We'll post the program at about 6 o'clock this evening. That's Friday night. Now, up next, you know, moisture levels on corn were much higher this year than in recent years. That goes without saying so much anymore. Some farmers, of course, were harvesting corn at moisture levels above 30%. As you'll hear, those high moisture levels have resulted in shrink and drying costs for grain delivered to elevators and processors that could be near $100 an acre.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
The high cost of drying this year's corn crop is adding insult to financial misery. The 2009 growing season was already the most costly year to plant corn ever recorded in Illinois. And now the late harvest is piling more dollars on the losses farmers might expect. That's going to put a real pinch on cash flows, says University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnittke.
Yeah, it hurts, and there's really nothing that you can do about that. But there is a couple of things that you probably should consider as you're moving forward. One is that is going to be a significant drag on cash flow. And even though we're now seeing cash crop prices rise, close in area up in the 350 and higher range, we still have that $100 drag there, which in a typical year would be more closer to $30. So we're having another cost there that even though we're seeing rebounding in crop prices, we're still not going to have the best income year, even though prices are rising.
Well, that cash flow pinch from the up to an extra $100 per acre in drying cost should cause farmers to consider the impact on next season's operating loan.
This year was going to be a high cost year before this, and now it's going to be an even higher cost. And farmers do need to begin to think about what cash flow needs they are going to have, and begin budgeting for those operating loans, which will likely be higher next year because of low incomes this year.
The operating loan is the money a farmer borrows to put a crop in the ground and is no doubt going to be bigger than expected because of the additional drying cost from this season. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. A quick reminder that I'll be on the road all next week with the 2009 Illinois Farm Economics Summit. Your Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, Dave Dickey, will be sitting in this seat for the Closing Market Report. During the week, I hope you visit with me at one of these sites for the Farm Economics Summits. The summit's registration begins at 7:45 in the morning and will be done by 1:30 in the afternoon. Actually, 1:30 in the afternoon is when you'll be able to leave after lunch. We do finish up around 12:30 on those days. On Monday, we'll be right here in Champaign, Illinois, at the High Hotel. That's the I Hotel in Champaign. On Tuesday, we'll be in Bloomington at the Interstate Center in Galesburg, at the Best Western on Wednesday, and then Rochelle at the Hampton Inn, actually right next to the Hampton Inn. There's a little conference center there. That's on the 17th, a Thursday. And finally, we'll make that trip back south then. On Friday of next week, we'll be in Mount Vernon, Illinois, for the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. We'll talk about crop and livestock price prospects, farm returns at a crossroads, a speculation and price volatility in the marketplace, climate change policy and agriculture. That'll be a big one to discuss next week. Using the acre and crop insurance programs and how to manage risk with both of those. And finally, economic crisis, linkages to agriculture and farmland values. That all happens next week at that Farm Economics Summit. Our speakers will include Paul Ellinger, a professor here at the U of I, myself, and I won't actually speak. I'll be hosting the program. Daryl Good will be there to talk about the marketplace. Scott Irwin, Brian Endress, Nick Paulson, and Gary Schnitke will be on the road all next week. We sure do hope that you make it out to see us on one of those days. To get complete details, you can visit this website. The address is farmdoc.illinois.edu. That's farmdoc.illinois.edu. Farmdoc is all one word, FARMDOC. The DOC stands for Decision Outreach Center. I hope to see you next week. Be back in just 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. An Urbana man is in custody on assault and weapons charges after holding police at bay for more than 5 hours this morning after a report was what was believed to be a domestic disturbance. Officers say 21-year-old Jeremy Irons had barricaded himself inside an apartment on Mitcham Avenue with a rifle. Police arrived at the scene around 4:30 and later determined he was there alone. Irons was arrested after trying to escape by climbing out a window around 10. No one was hurt, but some neighbors were evacuated from their apartments for a while. Police later learned the rifle was stolen, and there was an outstanding Champaign County warrant for Irons. A Western Indiana mayor has died just a week after being diagnosed with an untreatable form of prostate cancer. Attica Mayor Dion Butch Swift, who was 62, passed away yesterday at a Lafayette hospital. The Republican was first elected in 1999 as mayor of the 3,500-person city. He was reelected in 2003 and 2007. Northern Illinois University has cleared its tough-talking police chief of wrongdoing in the wake of allegations he tried to intimidate an editor of the campus newspaper. It also reinstated Donald Grady. Grady won laurels last year for leading his men into a classroom after a gunman opened fire on Valentine's Day, killing five students. But administrators put him on paid leave 2 months ago after accusations he threatened Northern Star editor-in-chief Justin Weaver during an interview. But NIU announced today the investigation found no evidence of misconduct or inappropriate actions. With holiday shopping in full swing, a University of Illinois law professor is urging others to give to charity. Suja Thomas and her husband have launched a blog with hopes of donating up to $50,000 to groups like Eastern Illinois Food Bank and Safe Passage. They're matching $100 donations. Thomas says trips to India and South Africa and witnessing the poverty there inspired her to start the website. The blog is www.thegiveblog.com. And the U of I has fired four assistant football coaches, but head coach Ron Zook will keep his job after a 3-9 season. The U of I says it fired three offensive coaches today, offensive coordinator Mike Schultz, quarterbacks coach Kurt Beathard, and receivers coach Jim Pry. Special teams coach Mike Woodford also lost his job. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. It all belongs, of course, to NOAA. Hi, Steve. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd.
It was really cold earlier in the week, but a beautiful day here in our part of the world. I saw a lot of combines out on the road as I made my way westward towards Lincoln today, and they looked like they were doing pretty good job out there. The corn was in good shape. Ground was frozen. No snow there, but that's not the case in other parts of the Midwest and the Corn Belt, is it?
No, it's been pretty substantial. It's going to be a while before they lose that snow, too, up north. Looks like the heaviest snow, the most, at least 2 inches or more, really fell north of a line from Kansas City to roughly Chicago to central Michigan. North of that, a lot of snow. In fact, a band from southwestern Iowa all the way through southern Wisconsin received anywhere from 12 to, actually, we saw a couple reports of 20 inches of snow from this storm. And then, of course, up along the lake effect areas, up along the Michigan UP and southern lower Michigan, the Traverse City area and north, got a lot of snow from the lake effect on top of the storm. So we have a really deep snow cover over a substantial part of the Midwest. Now, interestingly enough, much of central Minnesota has very little snow on the ground, generally less than 2 inches, and some places bare, but that may not stay that way for that long, since we should be able to keep the cold air in here.
Let's deal with that sort of the snow belt, I'll call it, across there from southwestern Iowa into the northwestern part of Illinois and then on through, I guess, parts of Wisconsin, Chicago, maybe into Michigan. It's awfully deep snow, 12, 15, up to 20 inches, you said. That'll be a problem, especially if it turns warmer and gets wet again, I would think. What's the prospects at this point?
Well, it would be a problem if it turned warmer fast or if it turned warmer and we had some rain on top of it. But right now, it looks like we're going to stay rather cold for the foreseeable future. I think we're going to end up, the way it's looked now, December is going to be a below normal month as far as temperatures. And it looks like we're going to stay generally on the cold side, colder than normal for the next week to 10 days. I'd say probably even through Christmas. So we're not going to get a lot of snow melt. There will be some settling and sublimation of the snow, so the snowpack will diminish somewhat. But we're also not looking for any huge precipitation systems here in the next week or so. We'll get a little bit of rain and maybe some freezing rain parts of the central Midwest tomorrow night into early Sunday, and then a few showers and then some snow flurries with a strong cold front that's going to come through Tuesday, and that will drop our temperatures back down well below normal for the rest of next week. So prospects for all that snow going away quickly are pretty slim right now. Should stay there, and snowpack should gradually diminish, but we don't look for anything that might cause flooding or soaking fields or anything like that.
Okay, thanks much.
Okay, Todd.
That is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Urbana-Champaign. It is a Friday afternoon. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Thanks for being along with us this afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find this program, other programming, including Commodity Week. Our guest this week should be Dan Bossi on Commodity Week. We'll report at 4:30 this afternoon, posted to WILLAG.org by just about 6 o'clock this evening. Please visit the site and pick up that program. I'm Todd Gleason.